One.
We, the people, declare today that the most evident of truths, that all of us are created equal, is the star that guides us still. Just as it guided our forebears through Seneca Falls and Selma and Stonewall, just as it guided all those men and women, sung and unsung, who left footprints along this great mall, to hear a preacher say that we cannot walk alone, to hear a king proclaim that our individual freedom is inextricably bound to the freedom of every soul on earth.
All right, we are here. It is the Rebecca Juro Show. Thank you for tuning in, as always. Thanks for sticking around. Man, oh, man, it is like, you know, frozen tundra out there. I don't know what it's like where you are, but man, oh, man, is it cold in Jersey.
It's been raining. We have been down way below freezing sometimes here in the teens. I think it was 7, but we're up in the mountains.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, it is really, really bitter cold out here. You know, it's funny because, of course, last year we had one of the warmest winters on record. And everybody's going, where's the snow? Where's the snow? Where's the cold?
Here it is.
We didn't get it, really. I mean, yeah, it got a little cold a few days here or there, but nothing really major. This year, boy, we are getting our butts kicked. Oh, God, it is freezing here. I mean, it's the kind of cold that, you know, you spit on the ground and it bounces by the time it hits the ground. That kind of cold. Oh, my goodness. Anyway, we have got a big show tonight. We've got Todd Fernandez, who is involved with the Equality Pledge. And, of course, he is a major activist who's fairly well known in the community. And he sent out this email about this Equality Pledge. It's rather comprehensive, very interesting. It's rather comprehensive. We're going to talk to him about that. We're going to ask him some stuff, ask him what he thinks about the chances of this thing actually becoming, reality. It's kind of, as I was saying before we started the show, those of you who are tuned in, it's kind of like almost like the opposite of a Grover Norquist pledge, where you pledge not to do something, raise taxes. This is, they're kind of asking somebody, the Democrats and people who are, you know, LGBT allies and folks in our Congress, to do some stuff, to at least pledge that they'll try, which I think we have a problem with, you know, and I'll have to tell you, this is part of the problem. We're going to ask Todd about this a little later. I've always felt that one of the biggest problems with Democrats is they don't have a problem making promises. They have a problem keeping promises. And, of course, Todd is with the AEB Project and the Equality Pledge team. And we will get into it with him and see what he has to say about this. So, anyway, let's get into a little bit of now. Of course, you heard as we opened the show the quote from Barack Obama. Now everybody is going nuts. Oh my God, he said the G word. Oh my goodness, he name checked Stonewall. Amazing. But you know, I have to tell you, it bothered me a little bit that he said, the context was, you know, Stonewall, but how did he define the rights? It's like, oh, people should have the right to marry. And they should. That's not the issue. The issue is not, should people have the right to marry? That's not the issue here. But the issue is, and I think it should be, is that when you define LGBT rights or gay rights, okay, and he didn't use LGBT, he used the word gay. Okay, and when you define that solely as the right to marry, it says something. For one thing, it says you don't get it. Or either you don't get it, which I don't believe, because I think Barack Obama is much too smart a man not to get it. Or B, you're intentionally erasing people from your speech. Okay? Stonewall, let's not forget, Two of the major instigators of the Stonewall riots, Marsha P. Johnson, Sylvia Rivera, both what we would call today, they were called drag queens in those days, 1969, was a very different time. The word transgender did not yet exist. We would call them trans women today. But these were two of the major instigators. And you know, this is part of a history that I think it's, what do you want to call it? I've heard all kinds of terms. Pinkwashed, I've heard gaywashed, I've heard, you know, but it's like an intentional rewriting of history. That, like, you know, people who think, well, the only people who really were there were these gay men, which of course is utter bullshit. You know, because who were the most noticeable, the most visibly queer people out there? Just like today, the most notable, most visibly queer people who were out there were the trans people, the gender transgressive people. Okay, they weren't called trans then, but, you know, by any other name, right? I think that's kind of, this is part of a problem. We've seen it throughout. Back in the day, I remember when I was first coming out, when I was first seeking information about being trans and looking into some of the politics, it was long before I was even ready to come out and start presenting as female. I remember it was right around the time when the Brandon Tina case was in the news, okay, in the early 90s. And I was, you know, like I said, I wasn't ready yet to come out. I was in my information seeking phase, which was not easy. I did have a connection to the early internet. My brother is heavily into it. He's a graphic designer. He was living at home at that time. He's long since gone. But, you know, I used to, like, sneak onto the computer at night and go research these things. Nobody else knew. But, you know, what happened was, what I remember, is that at the time, this was clearly a trans man, okay? This was a transgender person, a person who was born female, who lived as a man. And as, you know, if you've seen the movie Boys Don't Cry, you know the story. But the media coverage of the time, they were trying to cast Brandon Tina as a lesbian to, you know, co-opt the horrific, you know, brutality and all the media attention. They were trying to co-opt it and make it, oh, no, this was really a gay woman, which, of course, was a lie. And a known lie, and a lie that they made intentionally for political purposes, would hardly be the last time, was hardly the first time. Okay, don't forget, when Sylvia Rivera tried to speak at a gay pride event, she was literally, gay men tried to pull her off the stage. Yeah, that's the legacy here. Okay, now granted, this was many, many years ago. I'm not trying to contend that that's still the attitude, although, you know, you read on the internet, you know that there are still people like that very much out there, people who are like, you know, get out of our movement, you know, those kind of people. We all know who they are. You know, we know. I mean, let's be honest. But the problem with Barack Obama and his speech was so blatant and so obvious and so clear to detect. You don't need some loudmouth radio host like me to tell you about this. It was obvious even to an 11-year-old girl. And this, I thought, was really amazing. Now, I want to read a little bit about this. There was now this was covered, apparently it hit Facebook, was covered in Huffington Post, Gay Voices. And we'll read a little bit about the article that was written about it. And then I want to read her. She wrote a letter to President Obama. And I thought, you know, I mean, I do a lot of blogging. I do a lot of writing. I do this show. Takes a lot of writing. And I read this, and I said, you know, if I wrote this, people would be like, oh, you're an idiot. But when it comes from an 11-year-old girl, somehow it just has a whole level of impact. And here's the article. Let me read the article first, and then we'll read the letter. Barack Obama made history on Monday when he became the first president to speak about the Stonewall Uprising and the gay rights struggle during an inaugural speech. While many in the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender community were thrilled with the mentions, an 11-year-old transgender girl named Sadie wondered why the president didn't directly address trans people, too. Now, her mom said Sadie was so proud of President Obama for including the gay community in his inaugural address on Monday. However, she felt like the trans community wasn't included. And that inspired her to write her own speech. The speech, which began making the rounds on the internet soon after the president spoke, was published in full on the TransGrio site, which, of course, is Monica Roberts' site. Excellent. Go read it. It's good stuff. I strongly recommend it. Excellent writing. Monica is terrific. We've had her on the show. Hopefully we'll have her on again soon because she's awesome and we love her. And in any case, let me read this is a small clip from the speech. She said, "The world would be a better place if everyone had the right to be themselves, including people who have a creative gender identity and expression. Transgender people are not allowed the freedom to do things like everyone else, do things everyone else does, like go to the doctor, go to school, get a job, or even make friends. Transgender kids like me are not allowed to go to most schools because teachers think we are different from everyone else. The schools get afraid of how they will talk with the other kids' parents, and transgender kids are kept secret or told not to come there anymore. Kids are told not to be friends with transgender kids, which makes us very sad and lonely. When they grow up, transgender adults have a hard time getting a job because the boss thinks the customers will be scared away. Uh-huh. Doctors are afraid of treating transgender patients because they don't know how to take care of them, and some doctors don't really want to help them. Uh-huh. Transgender patients like me travel to other states to see a good doctor. It would be a better world if everyone knew that transgender people have the same hopes and dreams as everyone else. We like to make friends and want to go to school. Transgender people want to get good jobs and go to doctors like they are exactly the same. It really isn't that hard to like transgender people because we are just like everyone else." Yeah. I mean, how much more simple do you want it? Sadie socially transitioned from male to female in kindergarten. Kindergarten. My God. She was homeschooled until this year and now is in fifth grade and attending public school. A vegan, she loves anything that protects the environment as well as reading, swimming, basketball, and texting her friends. She listens to Lady Gaga, Pink, and Justin Bieber. And wants to work for Greenpeace when she grows up. She also wants to be a mom. And though Sadie has never been openly discriminated, openly discriminated against, her mother says she isn't shy or ashamed of who she is. And adds, "I'm always on when we go out because I never know how when she'll strike up a conversation with the person in front of her in line at Trader Joe's. When she chats with people, she introduces herself as, 'Hi, I'm Sadie. My favorite color is pink. I'm a vegan and I'm transgender. Who are you?'" Wow. Now that's courage. That takes courage. I don't know if I'd be able to do that at her age. In fact, I can personally guarantee you that I wasn't. Sage, I guess that's her mom, said she encouraged Sadie to write the essay because she thought it might help empower her and overcome any feelings of oppression. In the end, she says that that she wants Sadie to know she has a voice. "My dream for her is that she will be happy. That's all, really. I just want her to be happy." I mean, how awesome is that? I mean, you know, that's the thing. I mean... You know, people like me can spout off and we can go and say Obama's this and Obama's that and the Congress sucks. And, you know, we get into the politics, we get into these adult topics, and we get into the nuts and bolts of the Employment Non-Discrimination Act. And we, you know, but, you know, sometimes I got to tell you, sometimes it takes an 11-year-old to put it all in perspective, really. To say, you know what, let me explain to you really what is going on here. And, I don't know. I think sometimes you just have to listen, because you know what? In the end, I mean, yeah, of course it's important. We need jobs. This is important for us as adults, our right to vote, our right to live, get on a plane, you know, all the things that our laws and the way things work today negatively impact transgender people. And of course that, but when you hear it from an 11-year-old, you realize something. That this is who we're fighting for. This is what it's all about. This is what it's all about. Why do we need Enda? For Sadie. For my little sister, who's about to turn 19 years old. She's still in school. You know, where is she? She's a lesbian. Where is she going to get a job? Is she going to be able to get a job? Is she going to get married? You know, I mean, that's what it's about. It's about it's not as much about us, although we are important, of course, but it's also about those who are going to follow us. And now we live in a world that I could never have imagined when I was Sadie's age, when I was 11 years old. I knew that the smartest thing for me to do was to keep my mouth shut. Did I know I wanted to be a girl? Hell yes, of course I did. I knew from the time that I was old enough to figure out the difference between boys and girls. But I also knew that it would not be accepted, that it would make my life harder if I came out with that. And so I learned to hide that, as I think most of us did. And it took me till the age of 35, because I grew up in fear and afraid to be who I am. And that, it made my life worse and worse until I finally said, it's either this or put a gun in my mouth. And I was able to find the courage to do it. But, you know, we don't want Sadie and others like her to have to get to that point before they feel it's either this or stop living. We don't want that. We want her to grow up into a beautiful woman, to be the person she already knows who she is. And this is what it's about. And this is why we need Congress to get off their asses after a generation of waiting. You know, I don't want to wait another 10 years, like Barney Frank says, before Enda is passed. You know what? By that point, Sadie will be old enough to drink. Sadie will be an adult. I don't think it's fair to her to say, well, you can wait another decade. You know, it's okay if gay folks have their civil rights like they do in New York and Maryland and other places. But, you know, if you have to wait, you know, if it's still legal for you to discriminate during all your informative years, during your teenage years, through every school you may go to, you know, well, that's okay. No, it's not okay. It's not okay. And it takes something like this to be put so simply, you know, and she wrote this and she sent it to President Obama. I hope President Obama reads this, and I hope he writes her back. I really do. Because, I mean, one more time, I want to say this, okay? Because I think this encapsulates it all right here. It would be a better world if everyone knew that transgender people have the same hopes and dreams as everyone else. We like to make friends and we want to go to school. Transgender people want to get good jobs and go to doctors like they are exactly the same. It really isn't that hard to like transgender people because we're like everyone else. For all of the time that I've spent writing, for everyone that I've read and loved and enjoyed all that writing, I have yet to hear it being put better than those words. And, you know, what more can you say? You know, I mean, now if I wrote something like that, people would say, you know, what are you, drunk? You know, I mean, you know, because we get the fancy $10 words, you know, you know, we try to be, you know, artistic and readable and we're blogging on the Huffington Post and Blerico and places like that. But, you know, sometimes it just takes an 11-year-old kid to kick you in the ass and say, no, you don't need to get that fancy. Here it is. From a kid. All right. Now, we are going to be getting Todd Fernandez on the phone. We're going to talk about the Equality Pledge in just a couple of minutes, but we are going to have a quick break. We have got Jane County's new single with her new band, The Electric Queers. Love that name. And the new single is Ready to Stop. We will catch you in a couple.
Country tears of thee, sweet land of liberty, of thee I sing, land where my fathers died, land of the pilgrim's pride, from every mountainside, Let freedom ring, and if America is to be a great nation, this must become true.
Q1.
And liberty and the pursuit of happiness, real for every American. Being true to our founding documents does not require us to agree on every contour of life. It does not mean we all define liberty in exactly the same way or follow the same precise path to happiness. Progress does not compel us to settle centuries-long debates about the role of government for all time, but it does require us to act in our time.
All right, we are back. It is the Rebecca Giroux Show. Thanks for sticking around. And we have a great guest with us. Todd, are you on there? Can you hear me?
I sure am.
Excellent. Okay, so we have Todd Fernandez, and of course, you are someone you work with the Equality Pledge team with AEB in New York, and I have to admit, when I first got the email about the Equality Pledge, it kind of struck me as something that was kind of like almost like an answer to the Grover Norquist anti-tax pledge. And I was wondering, could you talk about the pledge a little bit and exactly what is it and what are you asking politicians, members of Congress to do with it?
Sure, I'm very happy to. First, thanks for having me on.
Absolutely.
It's called the Pledge for Full LGBT Equality. And if folks want to follow along, they can go just type in Huffington Post and Equality Pledge in a Google search, and you'll pull it up, an article on it in the Huffington Post that tells the full story. But the Equality Pledge essentially is intended as a statement of our own dignity and entitlement to full equality. And what we did is we itemized each specific issue where we want to add sexual orientation and gender identity to the existing civil rights laws that have been in force for decades, starting with the 1964 Civil Rights Act. And we insert sexual orientation and gender identity into those, and we add one major piece, which would be a federal marriage non-discrimination law, similar to what the Supreme Court did in Loving v. Virginia, but via Congress. And then the pledge calls upon the Congressional LGBT Equality Caucus to file a bill that contains all of this in one package, so that rather than having individual issues like student non-discrimination or employment or housing or credit, that we put everything we've been looking at for a long time now into one document that we can all get behind across the country, all pulling for one legislative goal that will give us full equality. And we call for this to happen by 2014. And 2014 is a special date because it's the 50th anniversary of the 1964 Civil Rights Act. And that's the overview. We have now close to 100 organizations from 30 states, and it just is a wide spectrum and diversity of organizations. And I'll stop there, and we can talk more about that, and I'll let you take
okay.
it where you want.
Well, I wanted to ask you a little bit more, because one of the things I noticed about this, of course, as you just mentioned, it does contain a marriage plank. And we know that President Obama and members of Congress have said that they believe, in fact, it was the one thing about LGBT rights that Barack Obama and Mitt Romney agreed on, was that marriage was something that should be dealt with by the states. And in fact, the Constitution actually kind of mandates that, because there is a clause in the Constitution that says all rights not specifically given to the federal government are reserved to the states. And traditionally,
sure,
marriage has always been one of those rights. So,
I'm happy to speak to that. The way to look at this is that non-discrimination has always been the purview of the federal government. The federal government has created the 1964 Civil Rights Act, which covers non-discrimination in housing, education, public facilities, public accommodations, all federally funded programs. And it didn't cover marriage because interracial marriages the bans on interracial marriages had been found to be unconstitutional by the Supreme Court in 1967. But the Supreme Court is interpreting the Constitution as well. And so there are many legal hooks by which Congress could enact the same kind of law. And because it's about equal protection under the law and ending discrimination, Congress, we believe, has that authority. It's not been talked about as a federal issue because that scares everybody. But the Republicans have no problems talking about a federal constitutional amendment to ban marriage across the country. They had no problems passing DOMA, the so-called Defense of Marriage Act, which did define at the federal level what the federal government would accept as a legitimate marriage for the purpose of federal benefits. So there's been intermingling in the at the federal level in marriage with respect to our rights, and we just want to see the reverse take place. And I think Congress...
I see what you're saying. But, of course, the question I have is you know, if you're going to do that, I mean, isn't there... I guess what I'm trying to figure out is what if presumably President Obama and the Democrats in Congress, because let's be honest, we may get a few Republicans who are willing to agree to this, but I think you're mainly talking about Democrats in Congress here. Even if you can get these folks to agree, a lot of them may not be willing to sign off on a marriage plank, because let's be honest, let's not forget, at this time, same-sex marriage is constitutionally banned in 31 American states. So doesn't that make this kind of a pledge a much, much heavier lift than it would be if, let's say, we were mainly talking about workplace and all the other things that you include here? And one thing we should do is as we go through here, we'll go down the list and we'll talk about exactly what this covers in addition to marriage, because I think that's important as well. You list public accommodations, public facilities, both with the Civil Rights Act of 1964, federally funded programs, adoption, police, school, homeless youth, health care, that sort of thing, employment, housing, education, credit, and also immigration, disability, and family leave. So it would seem that there's marriage itself would seem to be the much heavier lift, because in addition to getting members of Congress to sign on to marriage as a concept and as a principle and as something they support, they also have to put themselves at odds, very likely, in fact, in more than 50% of cases, with their own state's constitutional mandates. So isn't that making a tougher lift?
You're absolutely right. There's no doubt about it. Marriage is the Herculean piece of this. But this is where it starts from. Just to read a little bit of the beginning of the pledge. It says, in order to fulfill the promises of life and liberty and to ensure equal protection of the law as guaranteed by the United States Constitution, to protect the inalienable human right to be safe from discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity as required by international law and treaty. And then it says, to end the systemic stigmatization, cease the societal rejection, and heal the suffering of lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender Americans as mandated by conscience. So what that is speaking to is the international legal norm that people are supposed to be protected from discrimination based on status. That's what the civil rights laws do, essentially. And they cover now race, color, sex, national origin, and religion, and then there are separate issues for laws for age and disability. But effectively, we have a set of laws that protect people from discrimination based on status. So that's where we're starting from with the pledge, our entitlement to full protection from discrimination and to equality under the law. So therefore, the pledge is based on a principle, something that none of the individual bills do, the principle being that we are entitled to full equality, that it is the responsibility and duty of the government to protect us from discrimination because it causes extensive harm, the same rationale for protecting other people from discrimination, and that we are coming together collectively around a call for equality that will give us political momentum, energy, purpose, integrity, and a sense of dignity unlike anything we've ever done. So whatever the political calculus might be today as to who will support what and when, it's sort of secondary. We're stepping out with what our entitlement to equality, then we build the coalition around with that energy. And then we will see what that energy manifests. But with President Obama saying that essentially the same thing in his inaugural address, we have the wind at our backs. And 100 organizations have already endorsed it, including the Unitarian Universalist Association, which has churches all over the country, the United Church of Christ, Marriage Equality USA, Equality Pennsylvania, Equality Nevada, Queer Asian Pacific Islanders, Out for Immigration, you name it. We have a group in every interest group of our community. And what that already represents is a tapestry that's never come together and said, this is our dignity we're talking about. And so I think whatever we're looking at in terms of who will vote for what, when, and where, we just don't know, frankly. And we're not sitting in there looking at this as some political calculus. We're saying we're going to build a movement, and we're going to demand our equality. And I think the political calculus will change with time. Now, one little caveat on all this, the Supreme Court obviously is confronting DOMA repeal or DOMA and Prop 8. Mm-hmm. The possibility exists that they will make some substantive inroads for us on the issue of marriage equality nationwide. It's not sure how much, and it's unlikely people think that it will, the Prop 8 case in particular, will have a sweeping decision that grants us marriage non-discrimination protection nationwide. But it is possible. So regardless, if we get DOMA struck down and Prop 8 upheld, we are like two legs up on this bigger battle, and then we have this bill come and that says, okay, we've come this far, now let's go the rest of the way. I could see the bill, and I don't usually talk like this out front because we want the whole thing, but it could be that we work the next 2 years, we have Senate hearings that go through all of our harm that we suffer, psychological, physical, and emotional harm, the international legal duty of government to act, and then our what full equality actually entails. We create that record, and we push as hard as we can, and it may be that we get everything but the federal marriage piece. So I could see the bill having two sections, one all the civil rights pieces and one the marriage piece. And if need be, we have to come back to the marriage piece a little bit later, and we get everything else but that, we still will be much farther along than we are now. For 17 years, we've been filing ENDA, the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, and it hasn't passed. And several of us believe that that's because it just didn't have a big enough ask. It wasn't exciting enough. It didn't have a mass movement behind it. It was being pursued sort of as an inside strategy. And the Equality Pledge is sort of breaking us free from all of that.
I see what you're saying. Now, let's talk about the actual politics of this a little bit. How likely do you think, because again, as you just said, this is a pretty big ask here. How likely do you think it is that we're going to be able to get a significant amount of members of Congress on board with this?
Well, again, we've not started from that. We're not started back from the position of where will the votes come. We've started from the position of where will the movement come from. Mm-hmm. And because when the movement takes shape and becomes empowered and you have rallies in every state, and then the political calculus will change on the ground. But you're right, there will be big resistance to Congress people supporting a bill that overturns their state constitutions. But there's also a turning of the tide on this front for everybody in this nation. And the president's inauguration speech really was a demarcation of how things have changed and where we're going. So people are starting to see the writing on the wall. The Republican Party is splintering around the issue of marriage. You have major figures in the Republican Party talking marriage equality. So depending on the timing, I believe that President Obama has the credibility to pitch this up and to bring the people forward and the Democrats forward, and some Republicans, I believe, will rise to the occasion. Republicans were the margin of victory in marriage equality in New York. Their votes were helpful in Don't Ask, Don't Tell repeal. And so Republicans are slowly, one by one, peeling away from the past and looking to the future. And I think our future is clear for everyone to see.
I hope you're right. But, you know, one of the things that concerns me is, of course, we heard some clips from this week where he referred to Stonewall and same-sex marriage. But it's important to remember that the very next day, Press Secretary Jay Carney, his press secretary, confirmed that the president still sees marriage as a state-level issue. And also a few weeks ago, Carney confirmed that Obama still has no intention of signing the executive order, which, of course, does not require Congress or anyone other than himself, that would protect over 1 in 5 LGBT American workers from discrimination in the workplace, those who work for federal contractors. So given that there's this reluctance on the part of the president, he's got these lofty words that he says during his inauguration speech, but yet at the same time, his press secretary is basically saying, yeah, but we're not going to support this and we're not going to do anything about that. Given where we are, how do you think? I mean, I'm having trouble seeing how this gets. I mean, as you say, we got to build a movement around it. But I mean, these are issues that have been on the table for literally decades. I mean, employment rights, as you mentioned, 17 years, and we've made little or no progress. And if anything, we're still getting an administration that's running the other way, according to Press Secretary Jay Carney here. So,
okay, well, I'm happy to respond to all that. First of all, in terms of the reason the president has spoken about this issue being a states' rights issue, and which is inconsistent with the traditional civil rights position, the NAACP, even Benjamin Jealous, when he hears that, he says, well, the president, and what I think is going on there is the president is not trying to rock the boat and scare the public and stir up the opposition and give the sort of the way things are sitting now is, there's activity, obviously, in certain states that is very dynamic around marriage equality. But generally speaking, the trend is in favor of it. People are getting more comfortable with it. And the Supreme Court is going to do something momentous about this in June. And whatever that is will also help to turn the tide in terms of people's emotions on the ground. The president is a brilliant strategist, legislative strategist. And in terms of words versus actions, I just would like to recap a little bit. He got the United States to participate in the first ever United Nations Human Rights Council resolution back in June, and in other international documents that have made it clear that international law requires that non-discrimination provisions within the Universal Declaration on Human Rights, where it says all people are created equal, and the discrimination based on status is contrary to international law. He's made sure that explicitly now extends to sexual orientation and gender identity. So he's laid remarkable international foundation. He's also appointed a lesbian to the United States Civil Rights Commission. And he has, taken other steps along the way, basically, that have queued all of this up in a very calculated way. So I think what he's doing is they're buying themselves some time because they're going to handle immigration. They're going to deal with some climate stuff, perhaps, maybe early. I don't know if they're going to do that first. But there are a few other issues that everyone knows that are queued up ahead of ours. And he doesn't like to throw in an executive order or throw this or throw that haphazardly and stir the emotional conversation. He's more methodical than that. So I'm confident that he said what he said. He sent us a signal that is undeniable to get our ducks in a row, to get our movement organized around full equality. And he said it many times in the past, pressure me, organize yourselves, bring that to bear. So he has the backing he needs to go bold. And I'm just convinced that he's going to do it. Whether marriage equality will be a piece of the pie, I don't know. I can't say. But he certainly seemed to tie those two ideas together inextricably. And the last thing I'll say about the INDA executive order that some people are still eager to see is that the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, which is the federal government agency that enforces the federal employment non-discrimination laws that we're trying to be added to with INDA, they came out with a decision very recently that held that sex under the existing law includes gender identity, and then they have guidance that also says that sexual orientation cases could possibly be covered. So there is already, and doesn't get a lot of ink or press because it sort of undercuts the existing strategy of our movement for 17 years. But the fact of the matter is that we do now have nationwide employment non-discrimination protections that cover gender identity, and in many cases, depending on the circumstances, would probably cover sexual orientation cases as well. So I'm not as hot to trot on an executive order. I think that muddies the waters, it muddies the narrative. It's sort of, and then also sort of lets people start to get happy, oh, we got that, so then maybe we shouldn't ask for more. No, we should ask for full equality. And if the president mentioning our equality in his inauguration speech of 2013 isn't a clear enough signal to our community that the time to pivot is now, then I don't know what else we could hope for. To me, it was a sign from God, and I believe that President Obama is a product of the civil rights law. He's an international human rights expert. I believe that he sees it as part of his historical place to deliver us from oppression and to complete the work of Martin Luther King and, more importantly, the work of Bayard Rustin. Bayard Rustin was a gay black man who was the architect of the black civil rights movement. He was older than Martin Luther King. When Martin Luther King came into the picture, Bayard Rustin had been doing bus boycotts already for a long time. He organized the 1963 March on Washington. He brought Martin Luther King to meet Gandhi. He brought the idea of nonviolent civil disobedience to that movement. He organized and organized. And he is a hero. And so the 1964 Civil Rights Act and Obama's life is a product, really, of gay activism. Susan B. Anthony was a lesbian who started the women's movement. So gay people have been part of every movement for social change throughout time. And I feel that Obama recognizes that. And, you know,
I think, and the issue that I have, and we talk about this, of course, on this show all the time, is that we've always felt that there's a gap, a big gap, between what President Obama says and what actually happens. Just like there's a big gap between what the leadership of the Democrats, I mean, during the 111th Congress, which of course was the first Congress that President Obama had, which was fully controlled by Democrats. And they had promised us, as I'm sure you remember, for more than a decade, for almost a generation, once we have the authority, once we have the power, we'll pass ENDA into law. And what we saw was get a vote. What we got was Don't Ask, Don't Tell repeal, which was nice, and we got the hate crimes bill. But the reality was we heard excuses Press Secretary Carty saying, well, we're going to go, we want to do ENDA the same way we did Don't Ask, Don't Tell, because, you know, we didn't do that with an executive order. And, of course, you know, anybody who digs deep knows that there was language in Don't Ask, Don't Tell that prevented a president from using an executive order to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell. So when you not only are getting excuses from somebody like that, but disingenuous excuses that are completely at odds with the facts, it doesn't really fill you with confidence. You know, it seems there's more excuse making going on than forward thinking and saying, here's how we're going to get to this. It's more like, here's why we can't deal with you this time yet again. Here's yet another excuse. I mean, that's...
Well, I don't quite see that. I mean, first of all, in the first 2 years of his presidency, I thought it was a travesty that they didn't advance our issues faster. But then I watched how methodically he was doing everything. And for once, we were seeing progress on our legislative agenda items, and there was not any backlash. And then the tide of a public opinion continues to sway us forward. And what I've seen Obama do brilliantly time and time again is he introduces a topic, and then he lets, you know, the dust settle and the controversy unfold and people chit-chat and debate it. And then he takes another step, and then he takes another step. And so I just happened to see a trajectory that is indisputable and going in the right direction. And he's laid the groundwork. Like I mentioned earlier, when he appointed a lesbian to the United States Civil Rights Commission, they issued a report on bullying. And in that report on bullying, in a footnote, it had a litany of information about LGBT discrimination and how it harms us. And this was a report for Congress. They were laying the groundwork to make the argument and make the case. And I think he's chosen the political calculus rather brilliantly, in my opinion, considering all he had to deal with in the first 2 years. And, you know, we all know how complicated that was. I think he got substantive, measurable results with no backlash. He laid the groundwork. But it's not going to happen automatically. We're going to have to push. And the biggest issue with our movement structure as it is that it's controlled by the Democratic Party. The DNC controls Human Rights Campaign. They've appointed, you know, major donors again to head that organization. And I'm not trying to discredit that, but when you hire somebody who's a major donor or major bundler for President Obama to run the group, gay group, you know, obviously they can only pressure so hard, and that's a conflict of interest, in my opinion. That's also why we have the Equality Pledge. We're building a coalition of small to medium to even larger, like the United Church of Christ, of course, organizations that will be a different source of pressure, that won't be so locked up in the inside beltway organization structure that we've been confronting with Barney Frank runs interference about passing ENDA, which he was his own personal bill for all those years, but he stood down because he wanted to be a team player. We're trying to build a power base that will challenge that issue. And I don't think anything's going to happen without us pushing. Nothing happened. Well, I shouldn't say that. Don't tell the president was systematic about, but it did take prodding. It took people, Dan Troy and others, chaining themselves to the White House fence. There's no yes or no to any of this. It's all a dynamic social change scenario. But all the indications are great. And I think he's did enough substantively and structurally. I watched every movie made and every word he said on gay rights. And he has evolved this conversation in a way that the country could follow him, that the NAACP could follow him, and that we could let that set in so that we were prepared for more and bolder steps. And so I see that going great. I don't think it's a given. I think we're going to have to bust our butts to make it happen. And that's why, please, everybody, go to the Huffington Post, look for the Equality Pledge. If you're associated with any organizations, please invite them to endorse it. There are documents on there. There's a board proposal document people can look at that give full details. There's a full legal analysis of all the laws. And you can endorse directly on the page, both as individuals and as groups.
Awesome. I want to hit you with one more question before I let you go. Where do you see – now, obviously, you're saying Obama is systematic about this, and I hope you're right. Because, you know, I'll tell you, from my perspective, it just seems like – what I've seen as a trans person who, you know, when he came out in 2007 that said, I'll use the weight of my administration to get ENDA passed. And then, well, 4 years later, we basically, the only time I heard the guy even mention ENDA was at an HRC gala when he's talking to basically, let's be honest, marriage advocates. And I'll tell you, and I say this all the time, I mentioned this on the show several times. Last 2011, I was actually at the New York HRC gala. I was there for the Polarico project, and I saw the New York governor's representative list the Governor Cuomo's agenda. And when they mentioned marriage, the whole crowd went nuts. And then they mentioned gender, which of course is New York's transgender bill. You could have heard a pin drop in the room. Nobody noticed. Nobody cared. And so when you're in, you know, when you've got an organization that's really the go-to organization as far as Congress is concerned, where do you see LGBT rights going with this president and this Congress over his next term? What do you think he's going to really actually champion, if anything?
Yeah. Well, with respect to HRC, just so you know, I organized a protest outside of HRC when they had the Goldman Sachs dinner with Occupy and Queer Rising and other groups in New York. So I understand entirely where you're coming from in terms of that insider issue. And then the overlooking of gender identity issues, except for, again, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, which issued that decision. And that doesn't happen accidentally. So yeah. The president had been appointing people to that group, and that decision is very favorable. And it's those kinds of behind-the-scenes sophisticated legal maneuvers that most people don't hear about that I've been watching that give me more confidence as to where things are headed. So I think, well, this is our plan. We want to file a full equality bill in the next few months, and we're pressuring. We can't even get the LGBT Congressional Caucus to file a full equality bill. For the last 3 years, before the pledge came along, which is now taking off, before that, we were pushing for something called the American Equality Bill, which was sort of like the pledge, everything except marriage. So you would have probably liked it better. And my calculus was the same as yours. And but what was missing was the principle of our entitlement to full equality and the energy and enthusiasm you get when you push for that. So now that we have that, we want to get a bill filed, continue to build the power structure around the country and the momentum so that then we are ready to push the president to do this. Mm-hmm. And then we'll see where it goes. But I don't see how you make a speech like that in the inaugural speech. It's not a speech to HRC. This was a speech to the world. You can't step up like that and make those kinds of pronouncements and then walk away. He was partly talking to the Supreme Court. You know, he likes to tell the Supreme Court what they should do. And I love that he does that. So we're going to, and our movement momentum and power is going to be building too over this. So in March 26th and 27th, the Supreme Court will be hearing the DOMA and Prop 8 cases. There's talk of big rallies on the steps of the Supreme Court and at federal courthouses all over the country. That'll build, and by June we'll have a decision. And if it's big and great, we'll all be reveling and we'll have all this momentum at our back. If it's bad, people will be infuriated, and then we'll have all the momentum at our back either way. And so we just have to go in this with the right attitude that we're building something new that never existed. Whatever power we had before is small compared to the power we're going to muster when everybody is united around one intention, full equality. And then we'll fight that good fight, and we're going to have to push Senator from Wisconsin, Baldwin.
Tammy Baldwin, yeah.
Tammy Baldwin, to hold Senate hearings, because if you look at the new, we have now six gay and lesbian members, gay members, actually, of the House, and one lesbian member of the Senate. If you look at their websites and their campaign pages, none of them ran on gay issues. In fact, the Victory Fund advises them to make it a non-issue. So, okay, that's fine. That's how they choose to do it. But then they get to Congress, and all of a sudden, they're the co-chairs of the LGBT Equality Caucus. And I'm like, wait a minute. The gay community didn't vote for you. you don't get to set the agenda. And we've had to pressure them just to get organized and start having meetings. They weren't even meeting regularly. And there are 100 members of the LGBT Equality Caucus. So and we're now going back and looking at the whip counts on DOMA and on DOMA repeal, rather, and the various bills and saying, what is the basket of Congress people who would support full equality? And we'll start looking at that now more closely now we have the pledge in motion. But we've had to pressure them. So we have Sean Patrick Maloney, the new gay member from New York, and he was interviewed in the Washington Blade, and he used the phrase full federal equality many times. In the Huffington Post, after the election, you saw many articles talking about full federal equality. That mantra has become part of the conversation internally. The LGBT caucus, Equality Caucus in Congress, is inviting the major groups. There's a handful, maybe 10 or so, of the inner sanctum that get to go and discuss these things. Those conversations are starting to take place. And Representative Polis, a year ago, for that matter, promised us a full equality bill. He's hedged and bought time. I suspect they're going to try to stall some more because they're going to want to wait until after the Supreme Court decision. Because if the Supreme Court handles marriage, then everybody's off the hook. And Obama doesn't have to talk about it at the federal level. That's what he wants, obviously. That's why he was lecturing the Supreme Court right then and there.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think if they don't come through, I think he will come through because he is talking from principle. And so he gets that it's the responsibility of the government to outlaw discrimination. And so we're in as good a position as we possibly could be. His first term was a much rockier situation for him, and he had some major issues to deal with. Now he's on solid ground. He has a mandate. He has a mandate that he walked into having said he supports marriage equality, and people elected him nevertheless, or because of, some people would argue.
Yeah.
So we're in a whole new spiritual context. And all the indicators are pointing in the right direction. We all have to let go of our skepticism and start to believe again and to have hope again. And it's been so long that it's, you know, we haven't been able to have hope. But we, I think, have reason to have hope now, and we have to go for it like we're going to win this. And if we don't win it, then we fight even harder, and we will win it.
I you know what? Yeah, I certainly hope you're right. You certainly have my vote and my support for whatever that's worth.
And that was hard to get. Because I didn't realize that what a skeptic you were.
Well, you know, I've been doing this too long not to be. You know, I've been watching too much. I mean, we've had 4 years to watch this guy in action. And so it's fair to say, well, you know, if you base it on what we've seen, then, you know, you have to be at least a little bit skeptical because, you know, it's not like they didn't have the opportunity and they basically squandered it and said, well, you know, we're going to put that off. And I think that says something.
You know, Barney Frank didn't do his homework. Barney Frank did not parlay the ENDA the right way. He resisted including gender identity for so many years. He wasn't doing the work. For a decade, he could have been educating, bringing transgender people into Congress. You know, it's not enough just to hire one person. And he didn't do that work. And so he had what he thought was support for ENDA without gender identity, but he didn't have it with it. And then when the community rebelled, he found himself, you know, not prepared. And so, anyway, I don't think that's an excuse, but I'm just saying they didn't set it up right. And I hear you on what didn't happen. But what I saw the president do and what he did behind the scenes and in front of the scenes was all brilliant. If it weren't for the president, the DNC would not be where they are. So the DNC is not driving this. Barney Frank wasn't driving this. HRC was not driving this. The president has come in and showed how it's done, showed what leadership really is. And so I have more faith in him than I have in the entire system. It's not fair to have him carry all the water, which is why we've done the pledge, because we have to get the community off of just thinking about ENDA and executive orders and tiny little pieces and begging for crumbs, which we've been doing for 50. This movement started in 1950, 60 years. You know, from 74 to 94, by the way, we were filing an equal civil rights bill. But then, you know, AIDS impacted our community and devastated it in the 80s. So by 93, we had DOMA and Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And then 94 was the first year they stopped filing a civil rights bill and started filing ENDA only. And so that's understandable. I mean, we were devastated by that. Our community, our stigma was at an all-time high. We were just devastated. But that's now been almost 20 years ago. And we have rebounded, and there's a new generation of people, and there's a new consciousness around respect and dignity and equality. The NAACP has come light years ahead on just in the last few years. It wasn't 3 years ago that we were talking with Benjamin Jealous, and our own movement. In fact, Barney Frank's office was saying we can't file a bill for equal civil rights because the NAACP or the black community won't accept that. And I'm like, do you hear yourself? That's both racist and homophobic. And this is the plight of the victims of discrimination. We have bought into our second-class status, even though we resent it, of course. Some people see their way through it and are resentful of the people on the inside who hold us back. And those people are right. But we need to get everybody off the history, off the executive orders. We need to pivot to the conversation of full equality, just like the president just did. And we need to let the bygones be bygones and get on board. It's a new administration. It's the light is green. And we just need to stop thinking about small things and start thinking about big things.
Okay. Well, you know, you got my support. That's for sure. For whatever that's worth. I want to say thanks and really appreciate you really, helped us understand this a little bit better. I hope you'll come on again and let us know how this is going over time, because I think this is an important issue. I hope you can really, that we can rally support for this. I think it's a great idea. I'm still, you know, I think the jury's still out on how politically, potent this will prove to be, but I certainly love the idea, and I hope this is really can be a rallying point for the community. Thank you so much for coming on and talking to us.
Appreciate that, and I'm happy to come back on, of course. And we're about to hit 100, so when we get 125 endorsements, I'll shoot you an email, and we'll get back on, and we'll talk about all the new groups that have endorsed.
Absolutely. Please keep us informed, and we'll definitely have you on again. Todd, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
and have a good night. Is he still there? Or, Mr. Mike? Oh, hello. I hear music in the background. What's going on there?
Hi. Hello.
Hi. Okay, hello. I guess he's gone. Okay. Yes, he's well, gone. That was Todd Fernandez, author, I guess, and co-sponsor of the Equality Pledge. And awesome. What a great guy. It was so great to talk to him. And I hope we're going to have him on again because that was awesome. It was very, very good. And we're going to take a quick break. We're a little bit late on our break tonight because, Todd was so good. But we got a new song from Lucas Silveira, called Not Your Boy. And we will be back in about five and we'll catch you with, one of those special songs. Her on air anymore, but
sure we are. The producer thinks she's just wonderful.
It's Mike's fault. It's Mike's fault.
No, it's not.
It's okay. It's a perfect song for this.
I happen to love that song. That's Activity Girl, everyone.
Yeah, that's awesome stuff. From that's classic Joan.
Joan
classic.
Jett. Shh, don't tell
classic
anyone.
Classic Joan. Hey, you know, we haven't been going over, but we've been very good. We used to open with Joan every night. We don't do that.
We haven't played
anymore.
Her for, God, I don't know, maybe a year.
Yeah, well, no, except for that one when we played that YouTube clip from.
That's right, yeah.
From Joan Jett and Laura Jane Grace, which was just too awesome not to play. I'm sorry.
That's
you
right.
know, it was just one of those things, you know, transitioning trans woman, punk rocker, and Joan Jett is just too cool not to play.
Come out of the closet, Joan.
Yeah, well, yeah, we've been waiting for that for a while, but you know,
don't hold your breath. I guess.
Well, you know, when people say that to me, you know what I say about that?
What is the story about her not really acknowledging what everybody knows?
Well, she doesn't come out and say yes, I am, like you know, Melissa Etheridge. But
sure.
If you read her lyrics.
Oops, something is happening here.
Do what? Oh.
How odd.
Yeah.
Hi there. I wonder what happened.
Whoa. I'm hearing myself. What's going on? Okay. There we go. Sorry about that.
Okay.
I don't know who was responsible for that, but anyway.
It's probably my fault. The studio had a meltdown earlier, and we're holding it together with Juicy Fruit, actually.
You fed the gerbils, right, Mike?
No, Juicy Fruit works just great on this equipment. Chewing gum, you know, baling wire.
Well, thanks, everybody, for sticking around. Of course, it is the Rebecca Juro Show, and these two crazy people here are doing some radio. And Todd Fernandez, boy, you know, that guy is great. What a terrific spokesman. And so positive. I hope he's right. I really do. I hope he is right about everything that really maybe we're going to see. A different President Obama this second 4 years than we did the first. We can hope. I would say that he may be extremely correct in the sense that he may be that I think everything, you know, may be on hold until they get past that Supreme Court ruling in March or May or whenever that is when they take on DOMA and Prop 8. I think the whole marriage thing, they're not going to touch the Defense of Marriage Act until the Supreme Court rules, because they're just not going to do it. Okay, they're not going to go and legislate on that when the Supreme Court could turn around and just wipe that out. They're just not going to do it. They're not going to take on that political baggage until the Supreme Court has had its say one way or another. That much, I think I can pretty much guarantee. And furthermore, we've also got the Boehner issue. Okay, I mean, we've still got Republicans in Congress that are refusing to vote for the Violence Against Women Act because it protects lesbians and trans women. I mean, we're still at that level here. Okay, so I think we need to be a little grounded. We need to be a little bit cognizant of reality that even if we can get the bulk of the Democrats on board, right now, at this time, at this moment, there's not really anything that's going anywhere in Congress, because the Senate ain't going to do anything, because the Senate doesn't do anything. Was anybody paying attention? You know that there was a deal made on the filibuster today between Mitch McConnell and Harry Reid. Harry Reid had come out, said he wants a talking filibuster, which means, you know, you had to do a Mr. Smith goes to Washington. You have to go and speak and, you know, basically reveal yourself. If you want to slow down legislation, you got to do it in public. You can't do it behind closed doors. Basically, Harry Reid, as usual, caved again. Completely caved. They made a few minor adjustments here and there to some things that are like not even worth mentioning, but basically caved on the big stuff as usual. And then they wonder why we don't trust these people, because the guy just caves. He just caves. That's what he does. The minute he reaches any resistance, you know, he goes and makes backdoor deals with McConnell and waters down, you know, I mean, this guy is supposed to be a leader.
What function could maintaining the filibuster actually do for the Democrats? Because there's a reason why it never gets done.
Well, because the Democrats, there's several who feel this way. Dick Durbin who's that guy? Carl Levin, right. And a few others basically feel, well, what happens if we're in the minority? You know, then we won't have, you know, then, you know, they're afraid that when they become the minority in the Senate, that they won't have it. Well, you know, but in the meantime, I mean, you think if roles were reversed, if it was McConnell would have just rolled over them like as if they were.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, he would have just done it. He would have said, fuck you, Harry Reid. I'm doing what I want. And he does it because McConnell, at least, you know, I mean, he may be an asshole, but at least he keeps his promises and he does what he says he's going to do. Okay. I mean, we may not like what he does, but at least you can count on him to do it. Okay. Harry Reid makes big statements, makes big promises, and then just caves. Of course, that's what Barack Obama does too. So look at the example that's being set by our president. I have to tell you, I hope Todd Fernandez is right, and that Obama is setting up for a real battle over this. I hope Tammy Baldwin is going to be a major factor. But I'll tell you, if I'm going on where I've seen over the last 4 years, what we've had on the issues that are most important in our lives, which would have to be jobs and marriage, right? On those two issues, you can sum it up in four words as to what Obama and the Democrats have done. Big words, no action. That's what we've gotten for 4 years. I mean, they couldn't even get it done when they had full control of the Congress and the White House. And they still couldn't even get a vote. And so I wish I could be as optimistic as Todd Fernandez, but what I expect, I mean, what I hope, is that they'll get their shit together and that they'll start to be even, you know, I mean, that there'll be something happening, that people will start to come out, that there'll be a real movement, that'll be a real effort, that'll have an impact. But what I expect, What I believe, what I honestly expect, is I expect nothing. I expect more excuses. I expect Barack Obama to continue to refuse to protect more than 1 in 5 American workers. What I expect is I expect more excuses and just plain silence from Democrats in Congress when asked what they're going to do. I expect more disingenuous bullshit from Jay Carney trying to defend his president from repeated failures and his repeated refusal to keep the promises he made when he was campaigning for our votes, when he was asking for our donations, when he was asking for our support, when he was willing to come out and say that he would use the weight of his administration to support ENDA. I expect more of the same. Because I don't think Barack Obama is a real progressive. I don't think he's a real liberal. I think what he is a centrist. I think he cares about keeping big business happy. Because let's be honest, who benefits from failing to protect LGBT workers from discrimination nationwide? Who benefits from that? Does the Congress benefit from that? Not really. No real way. The only people who really benefit in any tangible way is big business, big money. Those are the people who benefit from keeping it legal to throw transgender people out of their homes, fire them from their jobs, refuse to hire them, deny them rights and social services. Big business is the only place that comes out on top. And when you see how well the people at the top have done under Barack Obama, it seems like, that's who he's really speaking for these days. He's not going to protect LGBT people from discrimination. What he's doing is protecting big business from having to honor the kind of ideals that he is so frequently talks about when they put a microphone in front of his face. You know, he'll talk a good game, but he folds in the clutch. He's not willing to back it up. And to me, that speaks to a credibility issue. Give us something, Mr. President. Okay? I mean, hate crimes is nice. I mean, it's nice. But you know what? I'm sorry. That was easy. That was a low-hanging fruit right there. How many Republicans are going to come to the floor of the Senate or the House and say, I oppose protecting people from having their heads kicked in for being queer? I mean, is that really an argument you're going to expect? I mean, even Republicans aren't willing to make that kind of argument. Even they're not that craven because they know they'd look like monsters. You know, I mean, now we've gone on from gay marriage, we've gone from I oppose to I don't want to talk about it. Okay? But you know what? That doesn't do anything. I mean, you think you're going to get 31 state legislatures to repeal those constitutional bans? I mean, I'm sorry. I don't think so. You know, I just don't believe it. I don't believe it's realistic. I just don't. I think when you look at the facts and the figures, I mean, you got 16 states that protect all of us. If gays and lesbians, 21 states on workplace rights, what do we have now? 12 or 11 or 12 states protecting gay marriage just now? Okay. I mean, they're lagging behind. And you know what the truth is what it is, and I've written about this. I wrote for the Huffington Post. I wrote an article called Justice for Sale, which was still up. You can look on my Facebook. You can find it. And what's really going on here is what it's not about what's best for LGBT Americans, what would help us the most. It's about what's best for Democrats. It's about what's most convenient for President Obama. It's about what's most convenient for Harry Reid. It's about what's most convenient for Nancy Pelosi. Okay, now bear in mind, Nancy Pelosi really can't do much. She's in a Republican-controlled House. This is a House that they're still going out of their way. They want to defend the Defense of Marriage Act. You know, I mean, they're as anti-gay as they come. Okay, nothing is getting passed in that House as long as Boehner is in charge. We know this. We know this. The reality is that even when they had the chance, they did nothing. We waited almost 20 years, almost a generation. And when they finally had the opportunity to give us, to do, to keep those promises they'd been made since, well, frankly, since I was, you know, since I was still in the closet, you know, I mean, they just didn't do it. There were no excuses. There was no, hey, we're having a problem here. There was no, we need you to organize and fight. They just didn't do it. And I've said this on the show a number of times. I remember I was keeping track, trying to figure out how many times George Miller, who was the former Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee chair under Nancy Pelosi during the 111th Congress when they had control, he was the chair of that. Where, and that's the committee where ENDA would go first, has to be passed out of that committee. He promised at least seven different times when he was asked, oh yeah, it'll get a vote. And it just didn't. So when somebody tells you something, makes a promise seven times, and that's just the number that I counted. I mean, it may have been more. Those are the ones that I've managed to keep track of. And when somebody makes that promise to you seven times and then just doesn't do it, that says something. That tells you something. It tells you something about the priorities of these people and the value of their promises. It makes a statement. And it's a statement we should listen to. That if we want equal rights, we are going to have to start hurting them politically. We are going to have to start protesting them. We are going to have to start denouncing them publicly. We have to call them out by name when they're running for office and say, oh, you know, George Miller's running for re-election. Let's tell you about George Miller. Here's why you shouldn't vote for George Miller. I think, personally, you know what? If I won the lottery tomorrow, let's say I won, I don't know, remember how they got like $200 million. Let's say somebody dropped $200 million on me. You know what the first thing I would do with it after I bought a radio station? The first thing I would do with that money is I would start a new political party called the Progressive Party. Start running candidates against Democrats who aren't willing to fight for us. I mean, I think that's what we need. We need a Tea Party on the left. That's what we need. We need progressives to say, you know what? We're not being served. We're being ignored. And if you're not going to fight for us, we're going to start nominating people who will. And, well, you know, if our candidates don't get enough votes and they just happen to cost another Democratic seat or two, well, then that's the problem, isn't it? And if you want to stop that, well, you know what you got to do. I think it's time to do that. I think it's put up or shut up time. I think it's time for us to say, if you don't support us, if you won't fight for us, then we are going to start promoting and nominating and running candidates who will. And you know what? In this climate, with the way things are being talked about now, who knows? We just might win a few of those seats. I think it's time. I think if, you know, look at the damage that the Tea Party has done to the Republican Party. Now imagine it on the left, okay? Because the Tea Party has pulled the Republican Party so far to the right, it's ridiculous. Let's see if we can get some people on the left to start pulling the other way. That's what I think we need. I think it's put up or shut up time. I really do. I think it is time to say, you know what? You fucked us over for the last time, and now you're going to pay for it. Don't forget. When was the last time we saw a change when they stopped trying to promote a non-inclusive ENDA? When people got out there and started protesting. When did Don't Ask, Don't Tell finally start the process of repeal? When people started chaining themselves to the White House fence. I think it's time, gang. I think we need to start going out there again. Weather will get warm. I know it doesn't feel like it now. But you know what? Spring is coming. And so should we. All right, we are going to catch another break. We've got Venus to Mars and all the pretty horses fall down. We will catch you in five. Got a little bit of time left. You know, I'll tell you, I was thinking about this during the break. One of the things I think is important about the Equality Pledge is it gives a list. It sets a standard. It says, here's what we're looking for. Now, again, as I said during the interview, I'm not so sure that the marriage plank is a great idea. I think and I know that people, you know, would like to see, you know, I understand Todd Fernandez's logic that, you know, well, if you could make a federal law banning marriage, you should be able to make a federal law permitting marriage. But I don't think that you're going to be able to do that. I don't think there are enough states. I mean, not when you still have 31 states that have a constitutional ban. I don't think we have a Congress that's that courageous or that willing, quite frankly. I just don't see it. I mean, even if we judged it by the most left-leaning Congress in modern memory, the 111th Congress, the first Congress during President Obama's first term, even if you judge it by that, I don't think that could have flown. I don't think so, because they've got a built-in excuse. Oh, no, it's a state issue, we don't deal with that, you know, and Congress is notoriously afraid of doing anything that looks like it's infringing on states' rights. And you know what? That's not such a bad thing in context. I mean, you know, I'm not talking about marriage here. I'm talking about in general, okay? That it's not such a bad thing that Congress is conscious and says, you know what? There are certain things that we can do, and then there are certain things that states can do. I think that's, you know, and it's kind of funny to be talking like this, you know, because, you know, you hear the gay community all the time, people in the gay community, oh, we should cut those trannies loose, you know, we don't need them, they're not a part of our community. You know, you hear that nonsense all the time. But as far as marriage goes, I mean, marriage is not, generally speaking, once you get past the DOMA part of it, marriage is not a federal issue. It really is not. Unless, and I don't think this is likely, I think it's about as likely as, you know, hitting the lottery, which I don't expect, okay? That somehow, some way, that this Supreme Court finds that there is a right to same-sex marriage nationwide, that it's covered by the Constitution, a la a Roe v. Wade kind of situation, that it's a constitutional right. I do not think that the Supreme Court, and particularly this Supreme Court, is going there. Then again, I never expected in a million years that John Roberts was going to vote in favor of keeping the Affordable Care Act. So that was a surprise. But quite frankly, I do not believe that even if they rule in favor of allowing same-sex couples to marry, in other words, finding Prop 8 unconstitutional, you know, because there is an argument to be made that, you know, once you've allowed something, you can't just then turn it around and take it away and say, okay, these people can't have it. You know, there's a constitutional argument to be made there. But that applies to one state and one state only. I don't think that the Supreme Court is going to overturn 31 constitutional bans on this. I just don't think it's going to happen. You know, now I'm not a lawyer. I don't know what the reality is in terms of legal possibility is here. But given the politics and given the makeup of this court, I have a hard time seeing that happen. So barring that, what's going to happen is at most, if you get everything that you can reasonably expect from the Supreme Court, what you're going to wind up with is them basically throwing it back at the states and saying, you know, you deal with it. Which is kind of what Obama and the Congress is doing, saying, we're not dealing with this. So when you have that situation, I mean, now, personally, I think that if you're going to discriminate, you know, I mean, if it's a law, you know, I mean, you know, I think we should be. I think that LGBT people should be a part of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. But I'm not very I'm not very confident of the prospects of that happening either. I mean, it's probably more possible than the Supreme Court finding a constitutional right to same-sex marriage, but I don't think it likely, because the court does not tend to legislate like that. And you know, I mean, on occasion it happens, you know, Loving versus Virginia and things like that, but it's rare. It's rare. It's rare. And so I don't think people should be staking, you know, counting on that. I think that's a setup for disappointment, in my opinion. When you have people like Alito and Clarence Thomas and frankly, John Roberts, you know, I just don't see it. I just don't see it. What I can see is basically going out and saying, you know what, that 2014 election is not so far away there, gang. You want our support? Here's what we need from you. Okay? And I think we should set the bar low to start with. Like, for example, I think the Senate should take a vote on INDA. Or something. Something. To show you're serious. Okay, I mean, because I don't think, personally, I don't believe that we have much of a chance of re-winning the House unless you get a real surge. And I don't think that surge is going to come with marriage, because I think people are not stupid. I think people realize that, yeah, marriage is nice and it's great, but you know what? When you have most people are not concerned about marriage, and the polls already show this. What people care about is jobs. They care about the economy. They care about, how am I going to feed my family this month? How am I going to pay the rent? That's what most people are worried about. Because the truth is, in this economy, most people don't have good jobs. And those that do, in most states who are LGBT, that job can go away. Now, here's an interesting little, if you read my Facebook, you may know, I have a big job interview tomorrow. And I'm not going to say where it is, because I don't want to jinx it. I don't think it's appropriate to talk in those terms on the radio about a company that I'm not yet working for. Perhaps if it's permitted, I might discuss it after the fact if I get the job. But I'm not going to mention the name of the company right now. Suffice it to say, it's retail management, something I'm very knowledgeable about, something I'm very good at, something I think I can succeed and do really well at. And it's interesting. I've interviewed with this company before, last year, a while back. And when I interviewed with this company, I thought the interview went extremely well. I mean, if you do these interviews a lot, if you've been looking for work, you kind of know when you're hitting it off with an interviewer, where it's like, okay, we're connecting. You know what I mean? You have that, you kind of get that sense where it's like, this guy understands where I'm coming from and he likes who I am. And I had that feeling with this person who I'm going to be interviewing with tomorrow. Or at least I believe I'm going to be interviewing with tomorrow. And I thought, oh, I got this. I've got this job. Well, nothing happened. And I figured, now, you know, when you're trans, you know. First thing you think, oh, it must be the trans thing. Yeah, they must, you know. I mean, now this guy knew perfectly well. But, you know, I've had it, situations where I know perfectly well. Because I've known people that have worked for similar companies or the same company have said, you know, that the problem was, it wasn't the person you interviewed with, it was the person's boss or two or three levels above and said, no, go to the next name on the list. We don't want to bother with that stuff. And that happens. It's a reality. It's a reality whether you're protected in a state or not. Because that's, the truth is that is a tough definition of discrimination to meet. You can't tell if they just don't hire you. So if they don't hire you, you have no way to say, oh, it's because this, because you have no proof. So you can't file a case when you have no proof. And the reality is in a lot of cases, people are skittish, or at least they have been. I didn't get that sense from this person when I interviewed with them. And I thought, oh, this is great. And then nothing. I didn't get a call back. I tried to call the guy. I had his card. I tried to call him. Didn't get an answer. I'm like, Well, I spoke to him a couple weeks ago because I had applied. I saw that this company was having another job fair. So I sent my resume through one of the job search sites, and he called me back right away and said, I want you to be there. Well, that makes me confident. And, you know, I figure I've got a good shot. Because he knew me last time. He liked me. I'm hoping he knows. I mean, I got the experience. I can do this. I've got the product knowledge that he wants. We'll see. But I have not felt as good about the possibility of being hired somewhere in a long time. And so this is very exciting for me. I went and bought myself a cute new top for the interview, you know, so I'm looking good. You know, it's going to be tough to look decent in, 400 degree below zero weather when I go whipping through there. But I'm going to look as good as the weather will allow. And hopefully, you know. So, you know, but the thing is I had assumed the first time around, I had assumed, oh, it's got to be the trans thing. Well, I was wrong. Because you know what he told me on the phone? He says to me, you know, he says, the problem was we had too many good people and not enough jobs. We ran out of jobs before we ran out of people. Now, as to what position on the list I happen to be, I don't know. I have no idea. But I have reason to believe that I've got a good shot at this. So I'm very excited about that. I mean, it's been around 4 years since I've actually been employed. It's been even longer. It's been about 5.5 years since I've worked as a manager, which is, you know, it's tough. I mean, being a manager and being a lower level, ground level employee are two very different things. You quickly realize that when you move into a management, you're no longer just some schlub off the street. You know, you miss a day of work, your boss yells at you, and you're done, you know, and that's it. When you're a manager, it's a whole different level. I mean, when you're the guy or you're the woman who has to open the store in the morning, you got to be there, whether you feel like going in or not, because nobody else is going to open that store. You're the person with the keys. It's a different kind of job. It's a different level of responsibility, which is why they get the authority and the paycheck that they do. So I've been trying to not get myself worked up about this, but, you know, kind of having a little trouble not doing that. And that's okay, you know. I just don't want it to show, you know. You don't want to appear desperate. You want to be, there's a line between enthusiasm and desperation when you're talking about applying for work. You know what I mean? And I'm trying very hard to stay on the enthusiasm side of that line, really, because, and it's not easy, because you know what the truth is I am a little desperate. I mean, it's been a long time. I got a lot of bills. I'm not doing the things that I want to be doing because I don't have the money to do them. You know, I mean, sure, here and there, I'm able to score a little here and a little there, and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, when you don't have a regular paycheck coming in, it your life is not what it should be or could be. And just the prospect of that, just the prospect of getting back to living a normal life, a life where I go to work every day, I draw a paycheck, I can get things, I can buy things, I have money in the bank, you know, just that prospect of that is very exciting because it makes me feel like, you know, I can have something approaching a real life again. And that's why I guess I'm a little, you know, there is a little desperation there because, I mean, who doesn't want that for themselves, really? And so, needless to say, whatever happens, I'll let you know next week on the show. You know, if I am an employed person, who knows? I mean, we may even have to change the time of scheduling of the show because if I'm working, if I'm a manager, I work when they tell me to work. And if they decide that they need me on Thursday night, well, I may have to play some games. So who knows? I mean, that we'll have to see what happens. I'm going to try and block out my Thursday nights. But, you know, the truth is if push comes to shove, the job is going to come first. It has to. It has to, but we'll work that out. I have no intention, regardless of what happens, I have no intention of not doing the show. It just may be, we may just have to alter things a little bit to accommodate, my new job. If there is in fact a new job, I sure hope so. So tomorrow morning, I get up nice and early. I make myself all beautiful. I put on my new top. And then I, bundle myself up for sub-zero temperatures and hop in my RAV4 and drive about, I guess it's about 15 miles from here south to where this job fair is being held. And I hope for the best. And I'll just, be the same person, because you know what it is, and I'm about to wrap this thing up, but you know, the one thing that drives you crazy, and this goes back to ENDA really, but you know, New Jersey has a good law, but the reality is all you're asking, all we're any of us are asking, all Sadie is asking, the little 11-year-old girl who wrote to President Obama, all we're asking, just judge us on who, not what we are. Judge me on my skills. Judge me on my ability. Judge me on my experience. Don't judge me because I wasn't born female. That's all. That's all we want. That's all we want. We're not asking for special rights. We're not asking for religious people to betray their religion. We just want to live. We just want a good job. We just want to be the same things that everybody else wants. That's all. That's all it's about. That's all it's ever been about. All right, we are just about out of time. I want to say thanks for tuning in. I want to remind you that if you missed part of the show, if you missed our awesome interview with Todd Fernandez, you can catch it all. It'll be rerunning in about 5 minutes after a lovely musical interlude from Mr. Mike. And we will catch you next week, gang. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you then. Have a good night, everybody.